You want to make money on MMA? Let be. You want to know who to put it in your parlay? Let be. You want to know a DraftKings stay away? Let be. So, who has the Leslie Smith underdog pick? Who is the Mexican dude and the lesbian chick? Everybody say you mean Lesbo and the Bean. Who's that out there living they dream? Lesbo and the Bean. Who's that still smoking all the green? Lesbo and the Bean. Come on, y'all, let me hear you scream. Lesbo.
Welcome back, everybody. Loving that intro we got going. It's a nice little tribute to Be Real in my eyes. But what a hell of a weekend we just had. We're coming at you with a breaking Lesbo and the Bean here at Lappy. After a 216 post show, we're going to go over and ended up just kind of how our night went. I'm going to take it back to the starting, though, real quick. An hour before the lines closed down, I was shitting my pants on my computer. Where were you? What were you doing right before the card started
at 216? I was at work, and I was actually going to walk in the back where I could check my phone, look at my phone in my pocket. And I see a text from you that is kind of one-worded in three different texts. And I'm like, holy shit, what's going on? Open my DraftKings. PPD, next to Verdum. Lewis out. I'm like, what's happened? I didn't even know anything. What had happened?
So, supposedly, Derek Lewis, if you had listened to Lat B last week, we had said, or earlier this week, we had said, he just retired.
My cards were locked, by the way.
Oh, as mine were.
My cards were locked.
We need to start a whole hashtag fix DraftKings where you need to give me another 20-minute window once a fighter falls out. Something.
Hashtag the MMA delay. It's a little different than other sports. We need a little delay before the fight starts. We know ahead of time if a fighter is injured before they go into the ring. Different than other sports where they may get injured in the ring. That's part of our game. So I agree with you. Hashtag the MMA delay, DraftKings.
So Derek Lewis, if you were listening on the show, we were saying his back injury, 3 months. Wow, it usually takes 6 months, a year for people to come back from back injuries. Apparently he has two bulging discs, and right before the fight card was about to start, Derek Lewis has tweeted and said he couldn't move, guys. He had seized up. I personally think that the workload of training and then just helping people on every day, he's just not had a regular schedule. And once that stress of the fight coming up, Verdum being a very game opponent, that stress kind of locked up the muscles. And it's happened to other fighters. Sky Straver.
Hurricanes are stressful. Speaking from experience here at Lat B.
Yeah, we still haven't
very
gotten
stressful.
It all together.
So I can't even imagine training for a fight on top of everything. And by far, Houston got it far worse than where we live in Florida. So I feel, how could you put that on top of training? And then not just training for a fight in the UFC. Or just a fight. A fight in the UFC. A fight against Verdum. That's kind of unbelievable. That's a lot of stress.
That's next level fight, especially coming off of a loss to fight Verdum, and Verdum did beat Marhunk. So either way, we're all of a sudden, I'm freaking out right before the card, trying to get it. I tweet at DraftKings. They just tell me that they can't change the time once it's locked, and I'm not asking for changing of the cards. Just open the window so I can exit some of my fighters, because what ended up happening is, as of short notice, they kicked Mark Godbear off the card. They said, you're too disgusting of a fighter. I hate you. You suck. We're going to have Walt Harris fight.
I agree with you. Verdum. I think it's kind of a, I don't, Godbear just is like, murp, murp,
yeah, they're like, what? He's going to be a flash knockout for someone. But the real fight was Harris Verdum, if it would have been heavyweights going against each other. So if you luckily didn't have Godbear and Lewis on cards, you eked your way out of there. But then you had, like myself, Verdum and Harris on cards. Verdum came through. Harris kind of kicked the living shit out of some of my cards by only getting percentage of a fraction of a point, if a point at all. It might have been a zero anyways. But with all these antics that happened in DraftKings, everybody had a shitty night. I want to know what some of the listeners were experiencing, if they had any of their betting sites, like what were some of the horrendous stories that came about? Because I'm interested, is like, that started the entire 2016, and the Lens fight fell off before, the KGB fell off before. It was just kind of doomed from the start. Anything else you want to break in before we just get into the card?
Oh my gosh. The whole thing was trying. I know we did kind of weigh-ins a little live on air, but Kevin Lee with the second weigh-in was... I was a little horrified that something was going to happen.
And I think you were saying, like, didn't you hear, and I couldn't substantiate whether he had been talking about really he was 18 pounds over, but apparently he lost that weight in a night. That's a lot of weight.
He tweeted out, "I told y'all, I ain't no bitch."
But your performance, again, more of a reason that we were saying, Ferg, because that gas tank, woo, played a role,
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Exactly.
When we get there. So yeah, let's just start the card out. I'm so glad everyone is here. Make sure you like and subscribe everywhere that podcasts are sold for free. And if you are being sold this, you're being ripped off somewhere because we are giving it away.
We need a percentage of that.
Giving it away. So yeah, go ahead.
Starting off the night with Brad Tavares versus Talis Leites. This ended up being a 3-round decision. I ended up switching with Leites on the cast, thinking that he was going to be a better all-around fighter. Guess what? Brad Tavares looked good. Brad Tavares had a stiff-ass jab, took a good punch, and those kicks, we've talked about them many times on the show. Except they started off the night with that outside to the shin kick. You remember Leites' leg after the first round?
Yes, and I was kind of surprised that you went with Leites just because you were the one who originally sold me on Tavares. Even talking about, because I was such a Spartan dick rider, that you were like, he's not going to walk through Brad Tavares.
Yeah, Brad Tavares isn't an easy fight, and I can be my own worst enemy at times and overthink fights. And hey, the guy on the way up is Brad Tavares. The guy on the way out of the UFC, Talis Leites. Unfortunately, he's just more of a placeholder than anything right now. People are using him to get a name built off of him.
Not even a gatekeeper, just a placeholder?
Yeah, I really don't think Leites... I think earlier in his life, if UFC would have been around, he could have been a champion. But
he was older. You heard it here first.
Woo! So, moving on to Leslie Dog, underdog pick of the week.
Leslie Dog. every time you say it right, I can't get it right. Leslie Smith, underdog pick
of the week.
Not even of the week, because we don't have fights every week.
That's true. Of
just the fight. Leslie Smith underdog pick. We need a placard, a poster. We need to write it somewhere. We should write it right across there, right in permanent marker.
Right. So. Big money, biggest underdog of the night, plus 450. If you've been tailing Lat B, this is why you tail us, to make money. We had John Moraga all over our cards, ended up cashing. Why I ended up saving my night was John Moraga with a knockout in the first round. Guess what? Immediately started off the night by John Moraga kicking the living shit out of that chin, also coming out of that Portland MMA lab Benson Henderson style of guys. So... did you happen to catch? Where were you when you watched this?
I did actually watch the Moraga fight, and I was very excited about it. The other thing that I, because it happened so fast. I mean, let's be real. I thought this was a fight that we were picking, like, best bet for your money. I thought he would win
decision.
Best case by decision.
Yep.
And I kind of thought he was at the end of his gig. I kind of thought he was at the end of his MMA life. And... as I was watching this fight, I'm thinking he has some more to offer. I'm interested in watching him because I don't think this was I didn't think it was going to be that decisive of a victory at all.
The hype train was high on this kid, and it was because of that spinning attack. But as we said at Lat B earlier on, that spinning shit tends to work on the regional scenes. It very rare does it keep working in the UFC, a la Yair Rodriguez. The answer showed you real quickly what you do with people that turn your back to you. So people are getting aware to it. I think those kicks to the outside of the shin, though, this was dramatically affected, which didn't let those spins happen. That's why all of a sudden he was backing up, but he ate a left hand from Mars, and he was out. I feel like he got a bag got up and kind of contested it a bit. But I really like Moraga's emotion because he was genuine. Did you see him tear up?
I didn't get to watch that. I didn't watch that.
So he was like, Daniel Cormier was pulling teeth. He was just like, tell me what happened. Come on, man. Help me out. And John Moraga's like, man, I just want to go home to my kids. This is like, and John Moraga's like, I suck at this, man. I don't want to do it. And then Dan was like, forced him to say, well, talk me through this. And he's like, all right, I'd like to thank everybody. But it was genuine. That's why I liked it. Whether it sucked what Moraga said or not, what he didn't say, just to see the real man in him come out and be like, there was trials and tribulations people didn't see, and you cashed big time if you listened. Anything else you want to add to that fight? Where does Baggy go? The Russian
fighter. Moraga has to be, if we had a list and a magnet board of our Leslie Smith underdog picks, and we moved him up with our best ones by odds, yeah. Moraga might be our best one to date.
He's up there. He's up there. Plus 450 is a scary dog to pick.
For a first-round finish?
It wasn't that scary because, again, Moraga, we went through it. He has the credentials. This dude went to decision with his first UFC competition, who also debuted. So, interesting where we see this Russian fighter go. Bibliov. Moraga, though, he's going to just climb. There's a lot of people that are going to have trouble with him. He's a hard-nosed Chicano fighter.
I guess I know, and he might be one of the only guys that I'm looking forward to seeing at his advanced age for a couple more fights.
Yeah, little guys I feel like can go a little bit longer with careers. As far as the lighter weights, it's like heavyweights as well. Heavyweights go into their 40s and can still show off, where little guys can, maybe they're not in that early 30s and they're done. They have different attributes to their body. Moving on to the next fight, we had Matt Schnell defeating Marc Antonio Beltran via 3-round decision. I felt like Schnell ended up boxing up Beltran using his wrestling in reverse. This was a really uneventful fight.
I thought you were going to say asleep.
The truth.
It did not hold my attention at all. I did have a guy standing next to me the whole time this fight was going on saying, I weigh 30 pounds more than these guys. I could kick both their asses at the same time. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my gosh.
And I
love it.
I wish. I would pay $100 if one of those guys would come out of the ring right now.
One of those guys, 30 pounds less than you, would mock you up.
Yeah, I had Beltran in this fight. I don't see Schnell going too much further. I don't see Beltran going too much further. I will not put either of these guys on my hot train. I see them both being as card fillers from this point forward. Home country card fillers.
The more potential I see is in Schnell, if that chin, if he starts to figure out how to get it. But Beltran, I think, does need to move out
Beltran's
of the UFC.
So weak, and Schnell didn't look great against Beltran. I don't like the word weak. I don't like attacking him like that. But Beltran just isn't UFC caliber.
We've
and
seen
Schnell
it
didn't look very UFC caliber against him.
So there's potential plays there because that's a fade. That's a good option of like, oh, okay, remember.
Very great call.
So moving on to the next fight, we had debuting Paulina Botello defeating Pearl Gonzalez via 3-round decision. This also somewhat just of a back and forth. Nothing really stuck out. I think Gonzalez is barely UFC caliber in a blossoming division at 115, or in a light division in 115.
Couldn't agree more.
And Botello barely held on in there as well. Both of these ladies against top-level competition, I don't really think I'm going to be too interested in. Though Botello, to me, has a bit more of the prospect right now than Gonzalez. Gonzalez is tough, but she's just fighting to people's ability and holding on for dear life. I feel like a lot of people were booing during this fight because Pearl pushed her Botello up against the cage pretty much 2 out of the 3 rounds, if not all 3 rounds, and no takedowns. It was stay away, as we called it on that beat, and we called it right. These ladies were on no winning cards. Actually,
Botello
made cash. Botello did get cash. She had 100
cards
and some points, didn't
yes,
she?
Yes, I had her on a few
cards. Oh, God dang it. I'm thinking of a different fight. Yeah, she did have a lot of output because she had a big output.
She wasn't huge. I don't know if she had 100. It was the other girl with the submission that got the 100.
Oh, that's right. Over Fari. That's where all these debuting fighters have got me mixed up.
Yeah, me too. I just remembered it just now.
This was a decision.
I did have Metello on cards, but I don't think it was for great. I could pull up something, but it's not that exciting. It wasn't a card changing night, but she was so cheap that it did afford me some fat.
And Gonzalez fighters. Wasn't worth it at all. But moving on, unless you have anything to add on to that, I think they're both
just... anything to add. Yeah, so, it would be more exciting than the fight. People would remember years from now, do you remember what Lesbo said about that fight? And they would not, they'd be like, what fight?
Yeah, exactly. They fought. So, moving on to a potential fight of the night, going from 0 to 60 immediately, Lando Venata tends to have this type of style of fight where it is incredibly close and showy versus Bobby Green, and this ended in a draw. This is going to be one of the rarest times you're ever going to hear it here at Lat B, but we got a double draw weekend.
Crazy. It did end up being a double D. It just was not a double debut.
So,
well, it was a double
it
debut.
It was a double debut. We had double Ds flying from left to right all night long.
Which is never a bad night.
Ever. It did mess up some cards, though, because I could see some... betting just windows getting a little bit funky.
Yeah, you never got
funky.
The extra points for the win decisively either way. So in a draw, Vegas wins.
I feel like we called this fight to the T, though, on that B. I was saying it last night that we were saying Bobby Green, I was saying specifically Bobby Green, was worth every penny because he tends to get up to the potential. And I think Venata's in that boat that doesn't matter the fight. He's in flashy fights. Why? Because he gets hit a lot. He gets hit a lot because he throws it out there, but... it's a matter of time until he can't wear those hits anymore. Venata gassed heavily. Bobby Green kept it in boxing. Did you think that it deserved the draw? There was a point deduction, though, due to a knee to the face in the first round. Do you remember that?
That's the only reason. That's the only reason.
That's why this was.
Other than and part of it, I almost felt like Bobby Green won it decisively, even with the point taken. I felt like it was Landau whole first round. But I think round two and three were Bobby Green. So even with the point taken, if round two became... Well, I guess, a draw.
Landau wore it worse by far. Bobby Green doesn't cut easily. It hasn't happened too much for him. And Landau got cut up immediately.
Are you interested in Bobby Green moving up in weight?
I think he looked good for the weight.
I think they both did.
Yeah.
I thought you said he doesn't cut easily. Like, are you interested?
Oh, no. I'm talking about his, like, face.
Oh,
he literally in fights.
Skin.
Yeah,
soft
he's
skin.
Like a dirt. You really don't ever see him bleeding in too many fights. And I always like to say that it's his Philly Shell boxing style because he, like, Mayweathers it and backs up. And
what do you think? Does Groovy need to change camps? Have you heard everything going on with the Jackson Wink thing?
I can't say that I have. Please, fill me in.
I almost want to open it up to read it verbatim, which if I read it verbatim, I obviously wouldn't
endorse. You're not going to
terminology, but I want to read it.
And this is Lando Venata towards John Winklejohn, or is it John Winklejohn versus his other coach?
It could just be the idiot that runs the John Winklejohn Twitter.
They need to get rid of this.
Let me see if I tweeted it out. How long ago? Little theme music. What time did I do it last night? It was a very uncomfortable whole thing. I guess I could just...
Bring it down.
Yeah.
We ain't never gonna bring.
Yeah, a little thing. Dang. I was busy tweeting last night.
Getting at it.
Okay. Found it.
Getting at it.
So, I guess Aljamain Sterling said some shit about Jackson Winklejohn's camp isn't that great. They just have one overrated fighter who's been popped for steroids a bunch of times. Okay. Then some random fan on Twitter, I'm not even going to say it because even reading it, it's disrespectful, but some random fan on Twitter said, N-word, look at your team. How many champs have they built? Weidman? Please, N-word. Hasn't been the same since USADA. Talking about Aljamain Sterling's camp.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
And
as a fan.
So Jackson Winklejohn, MMA, liked that tweet.
What?
The verified Jack. So it could just be the idiot that runs the Twitter but...
Or he didn't read and he was just liking every comment that people were saying. He's had to have reposed since then. He's had to have... Because people will send him shots of that. It's a new day and age. Like, that's...
Horrible to endorse.
People should be ashamed of themselves. We live in 2017, not 2008. Get with it, everybody. It's not that big of a deal.
And put it in such Twitter. It's not good anywhere. But then to put it out on Twitter, it's you're cementing it in front of millions of people.
Right.
Like, you're not sitting in your living room being just like, which is awful anyway. But then to just put it out there, like, people have some kind of chutzpah.
I have a friend that would go up and,
if it was a woman that said it, I would say, this bitch has a lot of cunt to say stuff like that. I don't know what you say about a dude that says that.
The anonymousness of the internet does tend to give people a little extra brass. And in a place where there's free speech, unpopular speech is still free speech, so I don't like it, but I'm not going to support it. I'll never follow that, whoever that dirtbag is, and I don't even want to put his name out there on our show, because...
No, I didn't say his
doesn't
name.
Deserve to be given any attention.
Anyway, so, we can go back into the
back talk. That draw. Woo! That was still fight of the night.
What do you think about, though, Jackson Winklejohn Camp? What do you think about that statement Aljamain Sterling made? About them being an overrated camp.
I think that another fighter is going to say that. We have seen multiple fighters go to Jackson Winklejohn and not necessarily stay, but always learn something. People don't go there and don't learn. Nobody's ever said, oh, I became a worse fighter after going there. People stay for their careers. Other people move on and they allow that to happen. And they.
Hendricks is on his way there.
There's multiple people that have revamped their entire careers due to the type of training they get there and the caliber of fighters.
Moving on.
Real quick, both of these fighters did end up winning Fight of the Night Award. This was the best fight of the night, and I would agree if you just want to see two guys slinging.
Where do they go from here? I agree with you. It was an amazing fight.
Even though the draw and it was all because of that point, I think you can put him in against anybody, though. Bobby Green has a longer tenure, so I would think that he would have... anyone on a winning streak? Nobody loses. You don't, like, this is a and one. This is the 15-1-1, or 15-16-3-1.
The thickest weight division in the UFC.
Anybody that's on a winning record, either one of these fighters, let's get it going. They need to get on a winning streak because they're just stuck where they're at right now. Moving on to the next fight, we had Cody Stamann defeating Tom Duquesnoy out of Jackson Winklejohn, another Winklejohn fighter fighting here. This was a decision. I feel like the wager gauger came in last episode, and it definitely paid off with Stamann. Sure did. We thought that specifically Stamann was worth every penny because he was going to make this a gritty fight, and he made it gritty enough to win a decision. I could have seen it being more of a split than unanimous, but that gas tank for Duquesnoy, or Fire Kid, ended up really playing out. That gritty wrestling American hard-nosed pressure really wilted Duquesnoy. Anything you remember specifically in this fight?
Honestly, you were so dead on with the wager gauger. Stamann is one to watch in the future and his potential. Both have huge potential. Stamann, though, I think a little more than Duquesnoy.
Agreed.
I think we've seen kind of a cap of what Duquesnoy can do. I think there's still more we might see out of Stamann to come. Unless Duquesnoy gets out of France. I think he's out of France right now.
He's been at Winklejohn for, I think, like 3 or 4 years now. It's been a little while. American wrestling always pays off. But who would you specifically ask for, like, a Stamann-type fight at 135 next? Who would be a good one?
I don't know if either fighter was... If it was a memorable enough fight. I thought it was a good fight.
Yeah.
But is it memorable enough to give it one of the top tier yet? Probably not. To me, though, the new entertainment world of the UFC that we're in... these two kids are good looking.
Yep.
Young, they should market them towards something. They have all the other young guys, but no one at this weight class. And if they want the younger kids and people to feel like you don't have to be Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell and these big fighters that made a name, the Brock Lesnars, Conor McGregors of the world, Cody Garbrandt of the world, let the smaller guy know there's money to be made too. Maybe now, after this fight specifically, the 125ers have a chance to show the world that they can have exciting fights and
be taken seriously
in marketing and marketability. So I think these two kids, marketable enough that I'll remember both of them, and maybe slanted what you'll have to remind me.
What happened in the last
with
fight.
Duguay?
Uh huh.
He's the one that I feel like he could pull me right back into a hype train.
A hype train, because he finishes people decisively when he does, but he ain't having that competition anymore.
We use Tapology when we have the TV set up in here. I will have the computer set up to it, where we pull up the Tapology as we go through it. One thing I would love from Tapology, at Tapology, follow them on Twitter, and you can go to tapology.com, and it's my favorite. There might be other ones out there, but right now it's the one that breaks up. If you're into more than just UFC, if you're a person that's into more fight, because they have everyone.
Everybody.
They have everyone listed.
We are UFC snobs and only bet on UFC fights via Tapology, so our records are specifically to UFC promotionally, just so in case people do follow us, that's...
And if stuff's big enough, always on Bellator, we will discuss it. There's things that we obviously talk about. And I probably, and you probably would too, if the Bellator was on DraftKings, we probably would make cards for this.
Yeah, we would talk about it for sure.
Maybe we'd be a little more into, maybe everybody would be a little more into watching it. Anyways.
So
I would like Tapology to update the pictures a little of the fighters, and I would remember them more, because so many of them, and especially Bobby Green, the last two fights, he doesn't look anything like the picture they have of him on Tapology.
Stommen looks a little bit.
And Stommen looks totally different. Yeah. He's the one that made me think of it. The picture of him on Tapology looks like he's a Michigan wrestler. Like, I'm just a bro, Michigan wrestler, but when he comes out ready for weigh-ins, he looks cold-blooded. I wish they had their weigh-in picture standing on the podium.
Yeah.
That's the picture I'd like them to show of every single fighter in the UFC, because they all have a weigh-in.
Right.
Unless it's a debut or a double debut.
Moving on to the next fight, we have Evan Dunham fighting at 155 versus Beneil Dariush. This was the second part of that double draw. This ended up being a draw. Wow, what an interesting way to get a draw. I don't even know how the scorecards had it. I think it was a majority draw specifically. It was.
How'd you feel about that? I know we had Dunham, but I thought Beneil won that fight.
I had Dariush, and I thought Beneil Dariush won that fight. Dunham, again, being crafty, did help out some of those DK plays, because I did put him on a couple, but he was worth every cent in that draw. Beneil definitely didn't live up to his price range there. I thought Beneil won.
I agree.
I was surprised that this was a draw. The point missing for Vanata makes sense for a draw.
I agree. But that, the first one, I'm like, okay, that can be a draw. The second one, I don't understand at all.
Yeah. And I don't even remember the scoring. I'm missing the scorecards in my head right now as far as to how it ended up being. Was it 28-28 out of, like, 29-29?
I didn't even look it up, honestly. I don't know if the fight snoozed me out at the end or what happened.
That's what I
don't remember the ending.
Well, it was just back and forth nonstop, but Dunham was...
Oh, I do remember Dunham unleashing a little fury right at the end. It was, like, back and forth of right at the end of the fight.
But Dunham was wearing it way worse, I thought, The whole fight, he was wearing it a lot worse. Where do they go? I mean, I think Dunham's capped out, and I think Benny, again, is in incredibly close fights, and I don't know why he's so elite on the ground, and he's proven that he can be so elite standing. I don't know why he didn't try to get to the ground so far, and it's that thing that we regularly say, these guys that come from jiu-jitsu fall in love with their hands, and forget about the what got him there, and he could have won that fight multiple times, I think, by using more of a ground level attack, but he's not doing it.
I agree. I agree a lot tonight with all these, and I think our picks were really close, even though we picked a lot of underdogs.
Yeah,
which I think pretty... the
fights played out really close to all of... That's why we came at you guys. Like, we're like, we got to get this off the press.
Yeah, hot off the presses. Much like the next lady fight.
A double debut coming right at you.
Oh, still, I had to... It was too new to be on a main card for me. I was so disappointed in this.
Especially when you had all these other fights fall out. You move them to the undercard and make one of those other guys...
Agree.
I
couldn't agree more. How did this happen? And I understand it was the 125. Was there something... Oh,
the KGB fallout.
It was PG. KGB.
Yeah.
PVZ.
No. KGB fell out of this fight. KGB from because she popped for the diuretic, they made the fight with Faria.
No, initially. But wasn't this supposed to be PVZ versus Kat or
Jessica I? I don't.
And
they replaced it with KGB and Fiara, and then KGB got pulled because of the diuretic, and then they filled it in with Borella out of Italy.
They should have just stopped for a minute, and just. Well, we're going to have a delay. Maybe this is a sign that we should delay the 125 division opening. And having, not only do you have Shevchenko's sister, wait till Antonia comes into the UFC.
The
125, it could be a really thick division. And I think, not that they shouldn't have opened it better. I mean, the girl came out and fucking...
It was
at all.
It right down took her right down. She used one of those ugly trips that I talked about.
I didn't
see
it coming.
Yeah, right to the back, and I had Faria as well. Decision. We thought that experience was gonna get her there, and I mean it was a quick back take. Good for Borella. That's someone to watch. That's who people had on that winning card of DK was Borella, and I agree with you. I didn't pick any of these fighters because it was a double debut and. I ain't putting my money on that. There's so many other fights that shouldn't have fallen through that I would have got full cash money on.
I lucked out. And I only lucked out. I bet you a lot of our DraftKings cards were so similar. I just, for happenstance, didn't put Verdum and Harris on the same card. But here's a new rule.
Two heavyweights, of course.
New rule. The same as the first fight of the night thing. If there's two heavyweight fights or even three heavyweight fights, I'm not stacking my card with heavyweights. I know the big reward, big payoff thing, but the knockout chance is too there, and they don't throw enough punches that if it goes three rounds to a decision, either fighter is ever worth it. So I think if there's two, only go with one of the four fighters as your heavy guy, like the Verdum. Or if you felt better about Derek Lewis, or if you felt better about whatever guy you think has the most decisive chance to land the most points. Yeah,
most one-sided.
Yeah, don't pick more than one heavyweight on a card because the knockout chance is too high.
So you can't double dip.
I don't think it's a fallout chance. I don't think it's a fallout chance, but when something happens, and here's the other thing when you were calling out DraftKings. Uh-huh. When something happens on DraftKings, when you're going to add the fighters together...
Uh-huh.
You have to give us a chance. To pick.
Give me a
you
chance.
You have to give Ask us a chance. A chance. Even if it's a 15-minute window where, you know, I have...
Twitter alerts.
I set my... If people that have alarms on their codes and...
Yep. If you set that up, I will allow it. I will allow your notifications, DraftKings, if you set that kind
Just
of stuff
give
up.
Me a little window or it'd be like 5-minute warning, even with the countdown clock.
I'm going to say that then the advice from Latby is you can't double dip. In the heavyweight division.
Don't double dip them fat boy.
Working on them double D's. And moving on to...
Are you motorboating?
We got Demetrius Johnson defeating Ray Borg via submission round number 5.
Okay, now honestly. Card stops here. This is the main event of the night. Are you satisfied?
I'm just like, I told you so. Like, I knew later rounds it was going to end up being. It was one-sided the entire way.
Would it have been at all okay enough to be your main event of the night on a pay-per-view? Or did you rolling up into Ferguson Lee now? Okay, I feel better about tonight. would Demetrius and Borg have been enough?
Especially with all the fallouts of the fights. Ended up also, we didn't get to it because actually we skipped it. They don't have it on tap here because they didn't get it. Verdum ended up submitting Walt Harris real quick. We all knew what was going to happen on 24 hours notice with Walt Harris fighting Verdum. So I don't think there's anything to say there. Walt Harris doesn't go anywhere. Verdum doesn't go anywhere. How is that?
How is that any victory of Verdum crawling the ring?
Yeah, like for either. Walt Harris had everything to win and nothing to lose, and he lost nothing there.
Verdum can sit around and wait to, as far as I'm concerned, Verdum sits around and waits for the loser of Overeem Naganu.
I think they're going to make him do another fight, and he's going to say, okay, because he took zero damage. Either fighter did. That was an immediate shot into a
armbar. I think they try to do it the same night, just so they can set up the fan storyline behind it of the loser versus winner, because the winner goes to Stipe, loser goes to...
How sweet was it, though, with Verdum immediately going for the takedown, and both of those fighters could fight tomorrow?
I do, because it was short notice, and... Overeem, Verdum knows of how much more advanced he is, even on the rankings. No. It was not I don't want to say not a shot, not at that weight. There's always a shot, or any fight in the UFC, there's always a shot.
At
but
that weight, especially.
Odds on that fight should have been so much further apart. That's why I think no one on DraftKings would have put Harris.
Nope. Maybe a couple, because he has that heavyweight shot. There's that potential.
I would have put athletic. First round submission. I think most people, maybe exactly. First round knockout by kick. Maybe if I would have thought about it too long. Right. But my first instinct, first round submission. But I do think it was really nice. He could have made it uglier for the fans. He could have ruined the guy's career or broke his jaw or something Nazi. But
they could both fight tomorrow. So with Demetrius Johnson getting that beautiful armbar essentially by throwing up Ray Borg by the double underhook. Who does Demetrius Johnson fight next? Because he's just going to extend the record now. Should he leave on top?
Honestly, in the 135 division, Ray Borg moves up. And there's guys in the 135. I think Cody Garbrandt can rule 135 for a while, but there's enough guys at 135 that have built big enough names. Cruz, Dillashaw. Why not, Demetrius? Fight some super fights. Fight these guys at 135 that have also, you know, people say they have fan base, but I think you put them together and all of a sudden that's a very interesting fight. But I think where I want to see both guys go from here is move up.
I don't think DJ. I think he has a body type to be that 125er. Borg 100%.
I agree. But how many more times do you want to see him? Who's he fight next?
Who's the sexy fight for him? Nobody. It's only in the next weight division. It's true. But it's because that's the only way people have an advantage on him is by having 10 more pounds of muscle. And he was fighting at that 135 division prior to that. So... Again, Demetrius Johnson, he'll just bring whoever else up. He's going to finish him. Ray Borg, move up to 135 and then fight whoever you want. Just get a fight under your belt. Do it soon. Didn't take too much damage that I remember seeing from Borg. Borg now knows what he needs to do to beat the champ.
I never want to see him at 125 again.
Yeah, I agree.
Ever. I don't know if he can compete with the dudes that are in the top echelon of the 135. That's why he's at 125.
He's scared about his height. It's all size because he just feels like he gives up too much. But John Lineker, and you have that type of body attack, Taz Mexican Devil, he was landing good shots.
Round,
he was in it.
First round. There was a couple times Borg was never out of that fight. That's one thing you have to give him credit for. But in the first round when he took Johnson's back and Johnson just little shrug
like
him off.
Backpack, taking the
everything
backpack
just, I was in awe. I was in awe of the whole performance. And Borg was game for Demetrius to show us what he's capable of. And not a lot of other fighters would have been.
Yeah, I agree.
I felt like Ray Borg was experienced enough to
worth
stay
every penny.
Young guy.
Worth every penny, Ray Borg.
What did Ray Borg
turn
up to be?
I don't remember. I put him on a couple. I think it was around 40 points because there was a lot of just transitions and strikes. Could be wrong on that. But it went five rounds. Five rounders tend to really have at that type of output. There was a lot of
scrambles. Chrome Dome at the... Did you watch the post-fight pressers?
I did not. I passed out.
Demetrius's head looked a little bunked up. It looked all knotted up on it. Yep. So there was some damage laid. I always notice the guys that are heavy ground game, their ears are really swollen afterwards. And especially two guys, Tony Ferguson and Demetrius Johnson afterwards in the post-fight pressers with their swollen ears.
So moving on to the main event, we had the interim belt up for grabs. Heavy favorited Tony Ferguson ended up submitting Kevin Lee in the third round. I ended up picking the fifth. I think you had the fourth, and Ferguson got it done in the third. That gas tank was everything. It was all about the gas tank to me. Lee looked good initially grappling and throwing body kicks.
Kevin in the post-fight presser, and he was very emotional, understandably. And I love when the fighters are emotional and let it all out there for the post-fight presser. It's what I want to see afterward for the winner and the loser. And Kevin Lee is a guy, he's made me a fan through this whole thing. I think he's incredible that El Kakui was hurt a few times in the fight. I feel like Tony Ferguson's so advanced. Kevin Lee was game for there to be a little bit of clinic in reversals, and it was exciting, and I was nervous for Tony Ferguson a few times in the fight. Kevin Lee said that he was not prepared for how well Tony was going to be off his back and how much energy he was going to exert being on the top. He never exerts that much energy being the top guy, but Tony was so active and had so many, he was like so intricate, but also he got him with the elbow. That's how he got him in that. He said he actually hurt him with his elbows from the bottom, and that's how he, why he fell forward, and that's why he got him in that
tighter. Because it was all of a sudden it was in, and it looked like he didn't defend, because as soon as Tony cleared the arm in that triangle in the third round, Lee took Tony down. Tony was throwing up a lot of not omoplata guard. He did that earlier in the night, but 10 planet stuff. Gah. Mission control, all that shit. He was throwing his legs up a lot and ended up sinking in a triangle. But when he was in that triangle you're saying Kevin Lee ate an elbow from in that position and just fell in way tighter. I did see as soon as that arm cleared, it was just like most people fight it. You know, to put that arm across the belly, and that gives you leverage to breathe. And all of a sudden, it was really, really deep. And Tony Ferguson being a consummate professional grabbed on the back of the head and pulled in tight.
Beautifully.
Yeah. And if he would have passed out, and Lee tapped a little bit, and I think Ferguson was like, oh, he tapped. They all kind of missed it. And then he let go and was like, Kevin Lee did not refute it at all. He was like, he got me. I think Lee goes so much further now because how he said himself, he wasn't ready for that. Now he knows what to be ready for. Now he gets the move.
I have to tell you what my most exciting fight is. And I really would love to hear from you guys at Twitter. And I'm not looking to cut off at all.
No, go for it.
I'd love to hear. And that's at Lesbo and the Bean on Twitter. I would love to see Kevin Lee versus Khabib way more than any of the other fights.
I want Ferguson McGregor,
that's obviously. Owed.
That fight is owed.
I don't think, to me, not at all. Khabib's not even in the picture. Not even in the talk. Like, what in the fuck? He beats Michael Johnson, and now Khabib has to fight with his interim belt for a guy with no belt at all. Ferguson's only fight is McGregor. That is his only fight next, and I agree. I don't even know who tweeted it, or I'd give him a shout-out. Ferguson is the better version of Nate Diaz in every way. In every way. And that's why McGregor doesn't want that fight. But Kevin Lee, his style of fighting, and Khabib's style of fighting, they're so similar. It is and they'll both stand up and throw. They both have ground game. They're both strong as fuck. They both have the same kind of crazy slam takedowns.
I might have Lee in that fight now. I might have Lee in that fight if I were to see that fight.
And Ferguson McGregor, I think you put that on the same card. I think you put them both as the headliner and the co.
I don't think Mac wants anything to do with Tony Ferguson.
I think Mac wants to defend his belt one time. And the way Tony is with his earphones, he would make me nervous of the type of guy that Mac could get into his head and make him fight emotionally. He was a little too addicted to those earphones with Kevin Lee. I did not like that. I didn't like that all the whole time. He kept calm the whole time, and he turned it up in the ring. He's been perfect afterwards.
Is Tony Ferguson next level? Because I do listen to his rambling banter, and he's just kind of a run-on sentence. That's how Tony Ferguson, is talking to media. Is he just goes, doesn't let anyone get a word in, and just brings a lot of movie, pop culture references into play, and then it's like, oh, I'm like this, this, and this, and he's talking about these links that some people may not see when he was talking about the song.
I think so. I think
what he's doing now. I do too. It's making more sense when I listen to his rambles.
He's like a 70s. We talked about it before on the podcast, and I had a problem remembering it then, but I was like, the guy in the garage with the wood freaking, and he has Bruce Lee on his wall. Uh-huh. Enter the Dragon.
Yeah.
Tony Ferguson is like a guy trapped in that time, even. Like, where he'd have his Walkman on, and he fights in his garage, and he has his poster of Bruce, and he bows down to it, and he believes in the martial arts. Tony Ferguson is a guy that I believe has the glow. He has the glow. Leroy. And don't you think he'd get it if you saw him? That would be the best thing you could say, that he might give you extra props instead of just being like, I'm a huge fan. If you said Leroy and bowed at him.
Would you say it? Kukui.
Yeah. El Kukui. The Coco, it is you.
So I think, though, the next fight for Ferguson is actually Fabrizio Verdum.
Fabrizio Verdum. Just put that in there.
So Dana, you were going to say
something. Oh, and the post-fight presser said he was impressed with, he didn't realize pretty much what a big draw Tony Ferguson was, and he's a weird guy, but the fans have totally embraced him.
Yeah.
And they were chanting his name in the arena, and he said there's only one fight to make next. And I think Dana, as a fighter, realizes all these belts got to be unified. Every single one of them. The UFC is, you're right when you called them silly, and there's no reason they should be, because a lot of the interim champs right now, in my head, the interim champs are the best fighter in every division.
Because they're fighting the number two competition to fight for the belt.
I mean, we could almost go through Robert Whittaker, to me, schools Bisping.
Woo!
Like, I can't even, these are fights we're not, and it's not fair that they are the
I think T Wood deserves the title.
Fought every time.
Oh, right. Connor won 55, and then.
Yeah, so, and at Tony, I feel like, but can Tony take the shots? Can he get hurt from that Connor punch? That's the whole thing. Yes, he can. He proves that every single fight, he always gets hurt. That's what Tony does. He scares the shit out of us. And then we all are like, oh, yeah, that's why he's the motherfucking El Kukui at the end. Like, we all remember. Yeah, like, oh, yeah. In round four, round five, I think we talked about it on the podcast, he's coming at you just as hard as round one. And you said he's a slow starter. We're going to see maybe a 10-8 round in round one.
We didn't say that on the secondary one, because you were so against it on the first one, and we didn't. And I was like, damn, I did say that on our initial one. Like, I think Kevin Lee's going to blow his wad on Ferguson in the first round, try to get him out of there. Going to be a 10-8 round, but that's going to be the only round he wins.
And that's pretty much what happened.
Yep.
He had some ugly slams. I actually was surprised at the fight Tony Ferguson fought. I was surprised. I thought we were going to see a little more kooky El Kakui rolls, kicks.
Yep.
There was a lot more ground game in this whole night than I was anticipating.
That Monada Green fight was fun as hell.
That was.
That was a stand-up battle nonstop. That was fun as hell. And there was a couple takedowns in that.
But then we had one five round and then a 3.5 round, almost 4 round fight of just ground game.
Yeah, a lot of it. It was intricate
and it was amazing for people that are into that. And I feel like as a wrestler, Kevin Lee, Khabib is your dream fight.
That's what I want to see. Exactly. That's exactly why. It's like, of course, because you want to see El Kukui beat the Russian Drago.
No, I was talking about Kevin Lee.
Oh.
I said that, Kevin Lee. Oh, I was thinking Ferguson. He's a wrestler.
I
think El Kukui now, I feel like, I know originally wrestling, he has a tattoo on his leg, everything, Michigan yes. alum, blah, 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 blah. But now I think of him like Eddie Bravo Jiu-Jitsu. I think of him as this guy that in his head, even as a martial artist, even with what you were saying, he is a guy that seems differently connected. That's what I think Jiu-Jitsu is, like this different level. Like, it takes a wrestler becomes the best jiu-jitsu guy.
Do we dare say the word that kept being dreaded all weekend long? Or in everything? The flow state?
I believe Ferguson might hit that flow state in a way. But in a way, doesn't Connor get weird?
Yeah, before? Flowy. And I agree. And I've heard the term in the jiu-jitsu scene. And even in wrestling, they'll call it flow. I've heard it as a flow, like, ooh, he's on, and you can see it. You just get into a rhythm, and all of a sudden, you can pick somebody apart.
Okay. I got you. I figured it out. Let Connor come back and defend a friggin' title, and then either move on to money fights from there. Against
Chad Mendez on 2 weeks' notice?
Either defend the title to Tony, or abandon it. Either one, because I feel like eventually we're going to see Connor GSP super fight. I never want to even say the guy's name that starts with a Paul and ends with an E in boxing. I never want to see that shit. I never want to see that shit. So I'd rather see Connor do money fights from here. He has a big enough name to sell cards like a Brock Lesnar anytime he wants.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who it is.
Doesn't matter. So fight or abandon the belt. So if he's going to fight, he has to unify this belt with Tony. And then I fully agree with you. If they want to pull up Khabib and let him fight Tony for the full real belt, of course I'd love to see that fight. But I just want these titles unified. I'm over them too. I feel like it's interim championship, like wrestling.
Yeah, like WWE shit.
Yeah, like why was that? How did that exist?
At least make them cool, just because it's a better photo to have all them belts. We've covered it here.
If they had a like Madison Square Garden belt. So every time we're in Madison Square Garden, there's a fight that takes place that fights for this belt and the champion carries over. So that's how it changes. If the champion wants to go up or down in weight classes of this belt, it's up to the person carrying the belt. We make the event 3 months beforehand. If they want to do kooky shit, I don't care. Just unify these titles. I'm tired of the big Michael Bisping. No one talks about this shit. Him running around with this bullshit belt. He defended it to Dan Henderson, and not to take anything away to Dan Henderson, who retired a fight before and pretty much for the money came back to give Michael Bisping his rematch. And then a lot of people think Dan Henderson won that fight, but he was retiring anyway. So then Bisping is gone. We don't see him again. And now he's fighting GSP. Which is a weird fight to me. People that are like, I want to see that fight. I still am not really into it.
Did we already talk about push come to shove with them too?
Oh, yeah, with the muscles. I think we did.
Yeah, where they got another fake shoving match, and it's just they're realizing publicity and Biz being lured him into it.
Is there anything else going on?
Any other drama that happened on the... Because I didn't watch it, and I haven't caught up yet with the post-fight press conference, anything that stuck out other than those things? Banata Lee getting fight of the night, also Ferguson getting a part of that bonus.
Yeah, well, I believe one more
got it, Buntello maybe.
Barilla. The amazing armbar of DJ. Dana gave everybody his props. That was that.
There was a lacking. I did see the gate events, and usually there was a trend, and this event was like 5,000, 6,000 less than usually at the gate. And I know that 100 something tickets were given away to first responders.
Or 1,000, 1,200. Or 1,000,
a lot. But I do think that there was a lot of people that canceled their tickets to Vegas.
Understandably. So, but let's not let them scare you, people. That's how terrorism wins.
The hashtag Vegas Strong. If you decide to donate, send them some shirts or something. Don't send them money because...
You don't ever know who's going to get that money. Send them real stuff.
Yeah.
Go to the families. I'm sure the families have some kind of social media that you can directly contact them in any way they'd need. Go to the source. Don't trust all the CEOs in the suits taking 8% of your money and putting a pink ribbon on it.
Exactly.
And follow us at Lesbo and the Bean. Follow us on Twitter at Lesbo and the Bean. And for all things Lesbo and the Bean, lesboandthebean.com.
Lesbo and the Bean!